With a new year comes a new season of the Tabletop Simulator League, and Pat and I, in this episode, talk about the things we want to get ready for and what we want to be sure our lists are prepared to handle. We also want to encourage people to check out AcrossTheBifrost.com. It's really come together wonderfully, a lot of new features still coming for it. It's a fantastic coalition of a whole bunch of different Marvel Crisis Protocol content creators. Please be sure to go to AcrossTheBifrost.com. And supporting the site, we have two fantastic sponsors. In the U.S., we have Discount Games Incorporated, selling the full Marvel Crisis Protocol line at the maximum allowed discount price, discountgamesinc.com for the full information. And out of the U.K., we have Blackgate Games, blackgategames.co.uk, a wonderful site selling the full MCP line at a marvelous discount, blackgategames.co.uk and discountgamesinc.com. All right, without any further ado, here is the latest episode of Across the Bifrost.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. I'll be joined in a moment by my co-host Pat Dunford from across the pond. But today we are going to be talking about things we anticipate happening on 2021. Can we learn from what happened in 2020 and kind of help predict what we anticipate seeing for the first season of the Tabletop Simulator League Season 4? But before we dive into that, Pat, how you holding up?
I am holding up real good. Thank you, TT. I'm looking forward to next year. There's all kinds of good stuff in store for us. I can't wait to start talking about it.
All right. So really what we're trying to do here is like, Season 4 of the Tabletop Simulator League is starting in January of 2021, and there's a lot going on since then, right? Criminal Syndicate was only live for the people that made the finale of Season 3, which again, congrats again to you, Pat. All of the X-Men haven't been live for it, and we know that there's an Asgard box that has been released in some places and has not in others that will be live for this as well. So what... That's just kind of a lot to process. Normally, the newest affiliation has kind of a huge spike in play percentages. Do you think the Criminal Syndicate has been out long enough that its shiny new syndrome has worn off?
Yeah, I think it will have done. I feel like right now, Brotherhood and X-Men are still shiny and new and everyone is playing them. But, I mean... The league doesn't start for a long time from the time we're recording this, right? About 6 weeks or so, 4 to 6 weeks. So I think by then, everyone will have had plenty of time to gorge on stuff. And we're going to be in this interesting spot. It reminds me of the summer. So in the summer, we had releases that were stalled due to the outbreak of COVID, right? And we had a period of about 3 months where there wasn't very many new boxes released for the game, and we had kind of a settled meta. And I think January TTS is going to be similar, where we've had all of these X-Men and Brotherhood releases at the start of November. We don't have anything in December, and we'll have had this 2 month period where people can practice things and start to refine their rosters in a way that isn't very common in our game.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout out. I do think we'll see things that are a little bit more polished than previous iterations. Now, there are definitely some polished lists we see. I think Travis, whose name eludes me from Australia, was a perfect example of that. And even Morgan, right? Where in season three, they played quote unquote older affiliations, right? They played rosters that they had more time to iterate on, to refine, to really kind of grind practice out. And they simply like adopted them to get prepared for the new meta. And I think that now we're going to have a lot more people prepared and a lot less people being like, oh, this is my third game with Web Warriors.
Yes. And don't get me wrong. It's always going to happen in our leagues that new stuff gets played disproportionately. And whatever stuff comes out at the start of next year, assuming stuff does, will probably feature prominently. But I would expect that people will be settling into their lanes even more so than current. And we've seen, as you said, you mentioned the Australians did very well with kind of tried and trusted options. But of course, Esmond won the league and he was using Wakanda, one of the first affiliations. I think we'll see more of this. I think we'll see people will have their preferences. They'll practice them a lot. They'll refine them. And hopefully that will mean there's a lot of diversity.
Yeah, and I do think that's worth pointing out. Was like a lot of people did really well with things that they kind of practiced. So if you're a Black Order fan, or if you're maybe you're an Avengers fan, right? The best affiliation. Like, I don't want you to give up hope, right? There's a lot to be said about kind of mastery of something, right? Where you really kind of dig into something and you really understand nuances there. So yeah, if you aren't excited about X-Men, if you're not excited about Criminal Syndicate, yeah, you know, hopefully this podcast gives you some things to get ready for, and then go back and, like, you know, look at your Asgard roster. How can you tweak that to be ready for it? Look at your Avengers roster, your Cabal roster, and how can you answer kind of the new questions and the new things that the new exciting toys are bringing to the table.
So, that said, okay, there's going to be a lot of diversity. That's for sure. And the TTS League has a lot of players, and I'd expect that it will continue to have a good chunk going into next year. But it tends to be that the lists that do very well, the players that do very well, there's a little bit less diversity there, right? The more competitive people hone in on the things that they think are really strong. Do you have any predictions for what people are going to be honing in on?
Sure. So you're asking, like, the things that I think are popular. I think the X-Men will see a disproportionate percentage of being played. I think there are three main archetypes kind of spread about them, and you can jump in here at any point in time. I think X-Men is a little more diverse. I think we're going to have a scenario-driven X-Men. I think we're going to have a brawly-driven X-Men. I think those are going to be two archetypes you need to be ready to handle. I don't think the brawly-driven X-Men is doing anything fundamentally different than has already existed in the game. I just think that it will be popular, so you want to be ready for it. And by ready for, like, do you have a good answer for Beast? Are you ready to counter Wolverine? And both of those obviously have, like, a two defense weakness scenarios. You could skew your roster for that. And then I think the Brotherhood roster that we talked about previously is going to be very strong, which is just, like, Magneto wins us the game, right? This very Magneto-centric, he's just going to beat you into the ground and I have pieces orbiting him. So those are the three things that I think will be most popular. With the caveat, and I'm going to shout it out now, that I think Hired Muscle is going to be very popular as well.
Ooh, Hired Muscle. So there has been a lot of talk about Hired Muscle recently, right, on the internet. There's a bunch of articles about it on AcrossTheBifrost.com. And I know that some of our fellow content creators outside of the website have also been making a lot of noise about it. So tell us, TT, what is our take on Hired Muscle?
Well, Pat, I don't think we have a unified take on it other than the fact that we both think it's very powerful. And I think we both agree that it could be very prevalent. And what it does at its core, and if you don't know, you look at Hired Muscle, is it allows you to move any number of extracts within a certain range. And what it functionally does, and I think we both agree on this, is it breaks the early game parity. It breaks the early synergy of, I'm going to control four things, you're going to control four things. Maybe we're fighting over a fifth. It kind of skews the advantage in the Hired Muscle player's favor, and you have to be ready to come out on an aggressive foot. That you have to be ready. You have to recognize quickly that the Hired Muscle player is going to take an advantage, and you have to be ready to stretch a little bit more, right? To take some more advantages, to really push to try to gain, to mitigate that early advantage they have.
Yeah. It's really likely with Hired Muscle teams that they are going to be ahead on the extracts. And it's at its best when, as the Hired Muscle player, you have priority so that you can pick extracts and you can pick two extracts that use civilians. So that would be like Spider Infected and Evacuation are the two best ones. And in either case, you're trying to get more points, as you said. And I think you're right that the answer here is to be aggressive in retaliation. It's difficult to have a single answer to Hired Muscle, at least in the dojo, because it the teams that use it are universal, right? It's a universal card. Anyone can play it. And different characters have different strengths and weaknesses when they're enacting the game plan. Now, one thing that it does is it brings the Hired Muscle using character into the middle of the table, around about the center line, and it makes them spend some power, right? So they tend to be in a position where, at least initially, they're vulnerable. They're quite far forward, they're low on power, so they're not going to be able to defend themselves. This is usually the very first thing that's happening on turn one. So you have your whole team to activate. But if you don't do something about it, then you're going to fall really far behind really quickly. And so I agree with you, TT. You need to have a game plan. Now, my opinion about this, we talked a little bit about it before the show. I feel like there's quite a lot of options here for game plans. Do you think I'm being too optimistic?
I do think you're being a little more optimistic. I think you're a little more optimistic than me, and that might be because I live in the US and you live in the UK. I don't know. You might just be a more optimistic person in general. I don't think this is the death knell of the game like some people are making it out to be. I think that in particular, I'm worried for people that aren't as played or practiced as you and I. I'm worrying about people who it might still be in their first dozen or so games. And you always see it circling the internet. It was a negative play experience. And most of the time I'm like, what the F does that mean? But this could definitely be a negative play experience. It can be one of those things where you felt like you could functionally, and I'm exaggerating here, I acknowledge I am exaggerating, where you could functionally, quote unquote, lose the game on turn one, but you're kind of forced to go through these additional rounds to play it out simply because you didn't act early enough, you weren't proactive enough, and you didn't really understand how big of a deficit you were getting yourself into falling behind X points per round.
Yeah. Definitely, I agree. I agree about that. It's important. I just think, so I have a kind of a rant coming up, and this is a rant that is also a prediction. Okay, so if you'll bear with me, please. My prediction is we are entering kind of a new phase of Marvel Crisis Protocol, a new meta, if you will. And Hired Muscle is an example of this shift, where over the last few months of the game, in the releases towards the second half of the year and at the end of the year, we have had a lot of releases that individually are impactful, but collectively shift the dynamics of the game, and in particular, shift turn one plays. Now, TT, you and I did an episode a long while back now called Turn One Plays, where we advocated for taking dynamic early actions that put you ahead. And that was one of our more popular episodes. It was one of the most fun episodes to record. I really like it, and I would recommend anyone to go back to it. But there are so many really powerful options now that are much, much better opening plays than the ones we talked about in that episode. And Hired Muscle is one example of that, but it's by no means the only example.
Yeah, so for the episode we recorded way back in the yesteryears, like, we were talking about, like, gamma launching people, or, like, advanced R&Ding, right, for, like, an additional charge action that we didn't see, right? They were very tame kind of turn one plays when we compare them to kind of what has kind of happened now. And I definitely agree with you, Pat, that the overall tempo and aggression of speed of Marvel Crisis Protocol has increased.
Yes.
For sure, in the kind of things we can do in Marvel Crisis Protocol, right? To name a few, right, the falafel portal from Defenders can make for some very interesting lines on turn one, right? It does allow you to secure the Wakandan herb on turn one, which, again, if you're not ready for it, if you don't see this Rube Goldberg machine coming, it can feel really bad when they're like, oh, you secured the herb turn one. That's 4 points. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a great example. And there's a bunch, right? There's a bunch of recent releases that let you score points safely. And there's a bunch of recent stuff that let you be incredibly aggressive and break that advantage. So you mentioned the portal. The portal can actually do either. Right, you can use it as a play to hop out of the portal, steal a bunch of extracts, and run away, or you can use it to put your big heavy hitter in the middle of the table and start making double attack actions in turn one. X-Men leadership is another example from Storm that you can use in either way. You can position a character, usually someone like Beast, who is an affiliated character with a medium-sized base. You can position him to be a leapfrog for your star player, right? In our last episode, I talked about Wolverine and MODOK being my broccoli. And you can use them to position these characters so they can have massively impactful turn ones. And then other abilities, right? Storm's leadership can also be used to advance forwards, steal an objective, and run away. Angela, right? A new release that's coming out in January that, let's be honest, everyone knows about at this point, can just quickly take an objective in the middle of the table and run away. And on the aggressive side, you've got things like Asteroid M and Mothership, which along with Portals and X-Men Leadership can just put a hard-hitting character in the middle of the table and they can be double attacking from turn one. And this to me is like, it's the new meta. If you're not stealing objectives with impunity or attacking anyone on the table on turn one, then what are you doing?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. And I think my biggest issues with Hired Muscle, and then we can move on from it, is it doesn't require any dice rolling for it. And it's a very powerful unaffiliated card. But either way, so some workarounds for Hired Muscle, I think that we both agree on, right? I think Deception is a fantastic card to kind of take advantage of that character who kind of sticks themselves out there as in an initial vulnerable spot, right? Whoever comes up and plays Hired Muscle, like Pat said, is somewhere close to the middle of the table. And if you can pull them closer to your line to give you more single move attacks, there's a chance you can pick up the days, whatever extract that character is holding, and negate some of the value coming out of Hired Muscle. Right, Pat?
Yes, absolutely it does. And there's similar options to Deception, right? If you have another card in Face Me, although that is harder to use in turn one. And then you have characters that are able to do pushes, right? You have the Spider People, Ghost Spider or Spider-Man Peter Parker can pull people in with Webline. Or characters with cheap throws can advance up and throw the offending character into the teeth of the rest of the team.
Yeah, I also want to take a moment, and I know this might be very hard to use on turn one, but Well-Laid Plans is another card that I think if you're really worried about Hired Muscle, setting yourself up to do a Well-Laid Plans turn two is something that could help kind of swing that back around, right? That's the Green Goblin Doc Ock unaffiliated card, which is right, roll five dice, and for each crit or wild, they suffer a point of damage. Any character damaged this way drops all objective tokens they're holding, right? It's just another way to try to swing back into how can I kind of mitigate that thing. So I think that's fantastic as just like a general, there are a couple tactics cards that help you with Hired Muscle. There's a few obvious things with Hired Muscle I want to cover as well. If your opponent is representing a Hired Muscle team, do not select an extract. Like, if you get priority, like, you want to select extract, and don't give them one of the extracts they want. So I really think you need to consider how many, like, I don't think you want more than one civilian list if you're not playing Hired Muscle.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You can get away with that civilian being the Skrull, but certainly you don't want to be taking both Evacuation and Spider Infected.
Even the Skrull is kind of annoying. I don't want both the Skrulls on my opponent's side. But yeah, I agree with you there. You could probably sneak away with that one better. But just for an obvious thing there, we 100% don't want to be doing that.
Yes. I think that's a good shout out. I think it's also worth just considering what your total crisis package looks like. And I wanted to call out a quick tip to your suggestion, TT, of taking well-laid plans. Remember, if your opponent is enacting the strategy, they have picked extracts, which means you are picking secures. And so one of the things you can do is pick secures that complement your counter strategy. If you've got well-laid plans and you want the power, try and pick Infinity Formula, right? So that you can reliably use well-laid plans on turn two to disrupt their plan. If you need to be disrupting their scoring or catching up, pick something like Gamma Wave, where it is harder for them to just run away with extracts. They get damage, and if they ignore the Gamma Shelters, they're actually going to start losing points rather than being ahead, and kind of force them to fight. If you're forcing them to fight, then they can drop their extracts.
Absolutely. And just to echo on that, I don't think secures like Demon Downtown are the correct things to do, right? Demons is, relatively speaking, slow scoring secure. And all that does is kind of magnify the advantage that they're able to get out of the extracts. We want the secure to mitigate or compensate for as much of the scenario difference as possible.
Yes, really, really important. And so with that in mind, it's basically going to be Gamma Waves or a 4-point secure, right, will give you more points.
Yeah, I think I agree with that at its core. Be careful about taking witnesses because that does put civilians out there on the field. But yeah, there's a bunch of different things you can do, whether that's either the D's, right? Black Order or Spider, right? One of those you have to interact with, one of those you have to camp on, but it still gives you 4 points. And if your opponent's retreating, maybe you can leverage that in a 3-1 to help mitigate there, maybe 4-1 on spider people. So just, I think it's really important to consider your total crisis package out there. And like I said, the biggest thing is like, don't pick a extract that they want if you end up with priority.
Yeah. One other thing to throw in, and you mentioned this at the start, right, which is being more aggressive than normal. The way that you're going to get ahead with these secures is you have to play really aggressively, right? You have to be forcing fights, and you want to be creating a game state where you're essentially saying, look, if you're going to run away with these extracts, I'm going to take all of the secures, and then I'm going to be ahead because I've got like one extract and all the secures. And you're forcing your opponent then to have to fight over some of the secures, and you need to put your powerful pieces in the right places to actually win those fights and have them start dropping the extracts.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say, and I know I said this before, but just to reiterate it, like, you can't get complacent when you're falling behind. You need to really evaluate, when are they going to be able to win? When are they going to be able to cash out these evacs? What does the score look like? When is it too late for me to catch up on crisis and I have to switch to like, okay, the only way for me to win is a Dazer KO? And that's an extreme case, but these are things we have to consider. If you're going to go for a, I'm going to shove my team across the middle of the board, I'm going to be very mobile, I'm going to daze them out and pick up these points, then we need to be careful in the secures. We might want whatever the flip D secure is. I can't remember what that is. Is that cosmic? I think that's cosmic.
Spider portals.
Nope, that's spider portals. Yep.
You have to secure it. Control it.
Yeah, I want to tag it, control it, and then I want to continue moving my pieces forward, right? I really want to just deliver my entire team into them. Then that's an important secure to look for. But you really have to be aggressive on this. If you take a little bit too long to identify what the hired muscle team is doing, if you take a little bit too long to react to it, I think it's pretty easy to get stuck in a hole that could be very hard to dig your way out.
Yeah, agree.
All right, is there anything else about hired muscle we want to talk about? I think the thing that Pat and I do want to say jointly, I love that I asked you a question, don't give you a chance to respond. Sorry about that, Pat. Is that it's not the end of the world. It's not an insurmountable mountain to climb. It is something we need to be aware of. It is something we need to be prepared for. And I think if and I know people don't love this answer, but like if you think it's the strongest thing in the game and winning is that important for you, then you might want to play hired muscle.
Yeah. Definitely agree. And yeah, I think that's spot on. It kind of leads me to a bigger point, and I don't know how much we want to go into detail about this, but it leads me to the point of think about what are you doing in the game and why? In the sense, if you really honestly think something you're doing in the game is negative play experience, why are you doing it? Like, what is the point? Because there is nothing in any... There's nothing in our Marvel Crisis Protocol community that gives you any sort of prize or incentive to win, right? So I'm not saying you shouldn't win or you shouldn't try to win. In fact, basically everything we do on the podcast is right, how to be better at the game and win. But my point here is really for things like playing at your store, playing friendly games, teaching new players, don't pull out something if you think it's going to make the game less fun for you. Remember that the point of the game is to have fun, not to win. The reason you're doing it is to enjoy yourself. And if it turns out that there's some people in the TTS League who honestly think it's the best thing to do and are going to push it hard to win in the event, I don't blame them for that at all. And time will tell if they're correct, right? It'll be really interesting to see if season 4 of the TTS League is dominated by hired muscle or not.
Yeah, and let's recap real quickly here, Pat, because I think this is more than fair to go through, right? So season 3 TTS finals, right? We have the top, was it 16 people or 8? I can't recall now. I think it was 16.
The cut, I think, was 16. Yep.
Right? All I heard about on Discord was how Criminal Syndicate is insanely overpowered and they're going to win. Right? Did you hear similar sentiment?
Yeah, okay. Nonstop.
Season 3 TTS after the first roster change. All I heard about how incredible Defenders was. And how Defenders is this unstoppable juggernaut, and it's just going to roll through there, and Defenders isn't going to be the roster to beat, right? Did you hear similar sentiment, Pete?
Yeah.
Pat? And then season 3 going into it, it was all about Web Warriors. How great are Web Warriors? Look at all the things they can do. You're never going to be able to secure these things. Miles is going to come over there and Venom blast them off of you, right? And that's all I heard through that. And we can go back in time even more if we want. But at the end of the day, season three was won by Wakanda. And did Wakanda use, did Esmond use some of the new tech that had kind of come out? Absolutely. And I've talked to Esmond. He's a really cool guy. We played one practice game early in my testing of my Corvus Proxima thing. I had no idea who he was. He didn't know who I was. And he just whooped the crap out of me. But it was a great learning game. And he's super, super good guy to talk to. We played through the game. We talked about the different things that went well, different things that went badly, how we each utilized terrain, he using it well and me using it very poorly. But it was a great learning experience there. And what I'll say is, like, I understand that some very loud people on the internet will tell you different things. I understand that the internet is really big into hive mind thinking, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't want to play Hired Muscle, there are ways to go about it where you still have a chance to play around it. And even if you end up in a scenario, they want priority, they're forcing what they want. Pat and I both agree that there are steps you can take to give yourself a chance to win still.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I think that's enough about Hired Muscle. I think that was 25 minutes on Hired Muscle. So we can move on from that.
Oh my
that's
gosh.
Basically an entire podcast. Other things we know that are coming out are Angela and Enchantress. Enchantress plays very well into the Hired Muscle scheme. Damn it, I just said we were done with this. Her ability to take extracts, though, plus being an Asgardian, is very powerful.
Yeah, she is very good because she has a lot of abilities that don't require dice rolling, and she generates a lot of power, right? Being able to move characters around, being able to take extracts, both superb. I think she is going to be a big player in the next season, assuming she comes out, because I don't know if we know when she's arriving. if she comes out in January, I think she'll be popular. We'll have to see how it goes. But my prediction is Enchantress is going to shake things up in a big way when she eventually emerges.
Yeah, I guess her and Angela are like the best and worst kept secrets in the game. Angela is also no slouch at all. She's kind of the more, if you're a little more like an aggro, I want to roll dice at people. She's super mobile, very bouncy, fantastic attacks, can shunt power very well. She's a very powerful character as well. They come with some really interesting cards too. I'm curious if Guardians takes a bump off of it. And then Rainbow Bridge is really cool as well. So without going into it too much, because this is going to be its own episode, we both think that if Angela and Enchantress are live, right, listen to our episode about them. There's a lot to consider with those two pieces.
They're very strong. Yeah, and I would expect they'll make a big impact when they arrive.
All right, so we think Hired Muscle, I think Hired Muscle Asgard personally is like the affiliation to look for if you're worried about Hired Muscle. Other affiliations we talked about were X-Men and Brotherhood. We kind of talked about them ad nauseum in previous podcasts. Is there another affiliation that you think people should be looking out for? And if so, why, Pat?
Defenders. Oh, I like Defenders a lot. Yeah, so I've talked in this podcast before about loving Defenders, and I championed them in season three, and then fell out of the top 16 pretty rapidly. And that's because I didn't keep up. I had a really good list, then the Band of Restricted hit, and I didn't develop a good enough version of Defenders quickly enough. And the biggest problem I had was in Team Tactics cards. My Team Tactics card quality was quite low, and I wasn't using portals. In a previous episode, TT, we talked about portals, and I said I didn't rate them very highly. I said I couldn't see playing them in competitive games, and I was waiting for someone to prove me wrong. My gosh, I've been proven wrong. I'm so glad to see that people have been making portals work. I think they're superb. Just the options that they enable to grab extracts, to threaten the table on turn one, very, very powerful. And Defenders, in addition to having this really strong portals card and the plays it creates, have also got cool new options. And in particular, I'm thinking about Wolverine, a really strong model who brings with him really powerful tactics cards that they have room to play.
Yeah, I think Wolverine is a really, really impactful character, right? And like you said, he's in three affiliations, right? X-Men, Avengers, Defenders?
Yes.
And, you know, I can't get away from it. It's this weird addiction. Like, I keep... And then Joe just kind of inspired me. I'm like, maybe I can make Avengers work, right? And kind of what you hit on, for me, one of the bad things about, and I don't mean to take your Defenders take and jam it into Avengers. One of the problems Avengers has
wouldn't be the first time.
is the weak tactic slots. And if you're willing to include Wolverine or Sabretooth, you can really shore that up, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Wolverine is an interesting option because regardless of affiliation, you can look at him as being a really good unaffiliated choice if you have room for tactics cards. Now, having said that, there's already other characters that meet that criteria. And there's also characters that do the similar thing to him on the table, right? There's other dangerous close-range brawlers like Venom and Killmonger that have excellent tactics cards. So maybe I'm overrating him. Maybe it's been my experience having him polished by Storm's leadership that makes me so high on him. But I think there's great potential for him, at least in Defenders and maybe in Avengers too.
All right, so what else would change in your Defenders roster to try to make it relevant? And is this something that you think is going to be widely popular or just like Pat Dunford popular?
I think it's going to be pretty popular. I think Avengers, sorry, not Avengers. Oh my gosh. I think Defenders
are really
flexible and powerful. The problem they have is they want to take a lot of expensive characters, and that makes roster building super awkward. They don't have the flexibility of some of the other teams. I think, by the way, that Asgard is going to have this problem as well, right? Asgard's average character cost is incredibly high. But with Defenders, you're in this spot where, in order to enable portals, you're spending 6 threat on Strange. You have a ton of expensive affiliated characters. You have Hulk, you have Ghost Rider, you have loads of 4s with Wolverine, Daredevil, Spider-Man, Peter Parker. You might even want an unaffiliated beat stick, so to say, like MODOK or Magneto, to go through Strange's portal. And so all of these options are superb, but it's actually really difficult, I think, to make lists that tick all the boxes that you want when they hit the table.
Yeah, that can make sense, but... Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Defenders will be super widely popular. I get what you're saying. It's something you should be prepared for. I just don't see them hitting the kind of popularity numbers they were doing in the mid-season of TTS3.
I tell you what, I am looking forward to Wolverine going through a portal, using them at the cost, Berserker barraging into someone on their back objective, and then beating them up a second time with his adamantium claws, taking their extract, sitting on their home point, and then followed up by some other ridiculous character, let's say Magneto, takes the next run through the portal, beats up the other home objective, and you could just sort of send all these crazy characters through the portal and do crazy things. I think it's going to be really fun.
All right. Is there anything else on Defenders we need to hit on, or can we move on to maybe some other affiliations?
No, I think that's good. Defenders' biggest problem is, like I said, they're top heavy. Their cheap characters are fine, but they've only got 2 3s and a 2. It ain't a lot to choose from.
So an affiliation that I don't consider top heavy, just got a new addition as well. What do we think about Web Warriors?
I really like Web Warriors. They're one of my favorite affiliations to play, for sure. How good are they? I'm not sure.
You know what they don't like? They don't like Wolverine Berserker barraging them on turn one. They are not fans of that at all.
No. I mean, they play a game kind of similar to X-Men in the sense they are mobile and tough, right? And we talked about this in our fairly recent affiliation review. They have good control, but they're less aggressive. I feel like Web Warriors play a really good, fair game of crisis objective control, but I worry a little bit that they may not have the tools to deal with some of the nonsense happening that other affiliations are pulling out with their tactics cards.
Yeah, I think there are early power issues, which is one of the reasons that they can't hired muscle efficiently in my mind. Just kind of bites them here a little bit. They're a little bit slow to get out of the gate. And with all the things we talked about other affiliations being able to do on turn one, I do worry about their ability to keep up. Because in my mind, and you've played more games than me, they don't win in big swings, right? It's kind of small incremental gains, right? And over the course of a game, that's how they win.
Yes, absolutely. And they want to just be staying ahead on crisis turn after turn after turn and staying alive until that gets them there. I definitely agree. It's very unusual that you have big swing turns with Web Warriors.
All right, so Web Warriors probably won't be up there. So really, we're talking about three affiliations, and you think Defenders will be up there as well. What about Wakanda? Wakanda has just been this kind of stabilizing fourth for all of 2020. They've always just been really, really solid. Esmond obviously won with them. Travis from the Strike Better podcast did really well with this interesting Thanos Wakanda. What do we think about them?
I think Wakanda are great and will continue to be really great. They just have such strong affiliated characters and tactics cards. I don't think Storm does a lot for them, so I don't think they've got much better. But I think you always have to respect Wakanda. They're flexible. They play a powerful game. I don't think they've got a leg up in power like some of the other affiliations we talked about have. But like, if you asked me a couple of months ago, I'd have said they're the best. So they may still be very, very good. Hey, they may still be the best.
What about the classic Cabal MODOK shell? I know you ran that extremely well in season two. Do we think that has a place where they're trying to force Gamma and just kind of grind you down with MODOK? Wolverine does not like MODOK.
No, Wolverine doesn't like MODOK. I do think it has a place. Couple of reasons. The first is I think teleporting MODOK with Red Skull is still relevant. It's difficult to have it in the right place to counter some of these strategies, but you can make it work. The main reason, though, is their overlap they have with Brotherhood, right? We rate Brotherhood as being a really powerful team that I think is going to make waves in Season 4. And three of the four Brotherhood characters are also Cabal characters, right? You can take Mystique with Deception, and she is just as good in Cabal as she is in Brotherhood. And so I think they have got a huge amount of power in recent months. Bear in mind that they also got a bunch of releases that overlap with Criminal Syndicate, right? Kingpin is an excellent four-threat character that works for Cabal. So one of the things I've noticed making Cabal list now is you have a huge number of great affiliated choices and you have a huge number of great tactics cards. And it's similar to Brotherhood. You have too many good things and you can't fit them all in. But unlike Brotherhood, you've got a lot more characters to choose from.
Yeah, I could see Cabal making a pretty big, like, surprise impact, right? Just like you said, they've consistently, them and Avengers have consistently gotten characters added into them throughout an entire year now. They're both the largest affiliations without double checking. I'm pretty sure that's factually accurate. They just have so many choices, so much variety in there. And then at the core, what they do is still really powerful, right? Cosmic Invigoration and Dark Reign are both very powerful tactics cards.
Yeah, Dark Reign is better now than it's ever been because you can run a whole team of affiliated characters if you want without really giving up anything. And pulling people into your very dangerous characters with Deception is really, really strong. I also wanted to shout out a sleeper hit, an unaffiliated character who I think is at his best in Cabal, and that is Punisher. Punisher has been superb in this affiliation for me.
Yeah, I mean, he has a static build-off, hip fire, right? If he gets additional damage through that, Cabal gives him one more. It has rapid fire, I think. Just flat rapid fire, right?
Just flat rapid fire. Same attack as Agent Widow.
And a couple different ways to spend power, right? He has the move through Spec Ops training, and he has the same thing as Mystique, right? Where he blows up terrain.
Yeah, so that's really what makes him so good, is he's incredibly good at generating power in Cabal, and he's incredibly good at spending it, and he only costs three threat. So rapid fire with Cabal leadership is great, right? Because you're attacking a target, and you're getting one power from the shot, plus one if you damage them twice in an action. The worst case scenario for this shot is you attack them and damage them and get two, and they're dazed. Or you attack them and fail to damage them and attack them a second time and fail to damage them and get two. So the Cabal leadership is guaranteeing at least two power whenever you use hip fire, and it's often three or four. And then the thing that pushes him over Mystique, in my opinion, even though Mystique is affiliated, is, as you said, he can spend power so well. He can spend two power to make a short move. He can spend power to do a range five aim shot, which is incredibly powerful. Really, really good attack. And what that means is he has a really, really high threat where you can threaten to double move plus do a range five attack or move and do a couple of range fives. And that is very, very good counterplay to people who are trying to grab objectives and run away from you.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference between him and Mystique, obviously, is like Hipfire being the static builder to me is huge, right? And then Aimshot is really a fantastic spender. Like you said, I can definitely see that, right? We just, you Hipfire and Aimshot almost every turn, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, very, very good. And it's kind of almost trivial to set that up. And of course, one of the things that's really interesting about all this is he synergizes really well with the Cabal. Mystique is great in Cabal, especially with Shipping's Deception. And then suddenly, I know we're talking about it a lot recently, but suddenly you've got two characters who are great with Doom Prophecy. And why not throw that in there too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you could put Three Widow in there as well. She's a fantastic Doomed.
Yeah, you could. I actually have a Cabal list I'm playing a bit at the moment that does exactly that, and it's good fun. Is it the best? I'm not sure, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a list for sure. So are there any other affiliations or are there other trends we think might be popular with 2021?
Yeah, so if I were to sum up the trends, it's to me, it's about having really good mobility and having good aggression. And in particular, you want to have the kind of mobility where you are aggressively stealing extracts early, preferably in a way where you can be fairly safe doing it. And you want to have the mobility where you can punish people for doing that, right? So if someone is running up, grabbing your extract and run away, you want to be able to run after them and beat them up. So with that criteria in mind, I can't think of another affiliation that does it well, but we have covered most of the affiliations at this point. Do you think there's one I'm missing?
No, I don't think there's one you're missing. And I think what you hit on is important, right? I don't think either of us are married to an affiliation for the next league yet. But I think that these are the things that Pat and I are keeping in mind as we're both kind of dojoing and workshopping different options and different things to play into them. You know, I'm determining, do I want to play a hired muscle roster? Do I want to play a Brotherhood roster and hope I can grind through it? Do I want to play an X-Men roster, similar to what you said, where it's easier for me to get across the center line of the field and deliver some fantastic broccoli? I think those are the things running through my mind about how I want to approach season four. And that's really what we wanted to do in this podcast. It's just, we're not here to provide like answers. We're here, though, to give you things to think about, to help you be aware of different problems you might encounter, and then, you know, encourage you to kind of explore and find answers and bring them back to us or anyone else.
Yeah, one of the things that I have really enjoyed with playing Marvel Crisis Protocol this year and discovering the game along with everyone else is often we think we have a good handle on things. We think we have a lot of knowledge, but people always come up with new ideas and fresh approaches that surprise us and are very innovative. So I'm sure that there'll be some of those knocking around next year as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait to see kind of what we're surprised with. There's a lot coming out of it. So is there anything else we think people need to know to get ready for the next year, Pat?
I just want to take a slightly different approach in summary and say, please remember, have fun, play whatever it is you love. And I hope our discussion has been encouraging and not discouraging. But if you're feeling discouraged, remember, this is just our point of view. We may not be right. We are often wrong. And if you think we've missed something big, if you think you have some great strategy that we have not commented on, don't feel down. Don't feel left out. Just take it and prove us wrong.
Yeah. And the last thing I think we both want to say that we've talked about off pod is like, look at how quickly the meta in MCP has cycled over in itself. I know it is quite often not what people want to hear, but if the current meta of MCP is one that you don't enjoy playing in, I just encourage you to just wait a little bit, play some more casual games, you know, find someone that's willing to play some Vibranium Heist with you, right? Because a few more releases, a few more new affiliations, right? And the whole thing kind of changes again. So if you're really that down on the game, I think it is healthy to take a break. Pat and I can both talk about War Machine, where we're grinding hundreds of games a year. Sometimes it's good to just take some time away. Sometimes it's good to step back. Maybe that's just playing another affiliation. Maybe that's changing what you're striving to do. It might not be winning all the time. It might be, you know, playing something a little more fun, or maybe busting out some ultimate encounters. Again, MCP kind of cycles so fast on itself that if you're not happy with the meta right now, if it really has you down, you know, just take some time away and, you know, come back in a few months because things change. All right. Well, we want to thank you all so much for listening. Patreons, you can stay tuned for after the credit scenes. If you're not a Patreon, you can check us out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Also, be sure to like, bookmark, check, and subscribe acrossthebifrost.com. It's a new conglomerate site where we have a whole bunch of different content creators coming together, where every day you can pick up multiple pieces of new content. So we're trying to make it like a singular portal. You can check out winning rosters there. You can check out MCDB and all sorts of other things. So Pat and I both thank you very much for the listen. We hope that this finds you well. Hope that it inspires you. Until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.